for the strong and the bold who have been taunted and traumatised for over 37 years. This one is for you. Richmond, yes, Richmond, our premiers. 5:13 p.m. on Saturday, September 30, 2017, is officially Tiger Time.
We never wait until the last one.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And we are in very strange territory indeed. I don't think any of us quite expected, after three rounds of football, this would be where we're sitting.
Well, it's not so much the 1 and 2, which was possible given
we had played two
teams that were quite likely to finish top four. But, having...
Well, and two teams who'd both beaten us in their last game, despite us, you know, winning 19 games of football last year.
Yeah, good point. But having... So, I'm going to talk about this a bit more, but, you know, to me, there's two dimmer errors. There's the error of mild respectability, and then there's the error of actually being good. But either way, if you do it as a total, it's been remarkably consistent that Richmond has had four stars for, you know, the big four. And I think with honourable mentions almost all throughout that era to Grimes and Edwards, both of whom have been incredibly talented role players. Now, three of those four are now injured. The fourth is going through some issues. And one of the additional two is injured as well. And only one of those six players that we're talking about is actually up and about. And my take, Nick, is, you know, the next man up stuff, you know, that's great. Coaches have to talk about that because coaches' job is to get the next 5% out of the team. But you can't, you can cover the loss of maybe one or two of your key players, but the sort of, we go back to a saying that the former coach of the Indianapolis Colts used to say when they had a Hall of Fame quarterback called Peyton Manning. He was asked why he didn't practice with his backups more. He said, "If Peyton Manning goes down, we're all effed, and we don't practice being effed. And right now, we're effed. You know, you can't do enough mindfulness trainings. You can't do enough next man off stuff. Works to a point." But you get a point to a critical mass, you lose all your good players. Dimmer has a winning career record because most of the players who are injured at the moment have been great for the last decade, and they're all out. So I'm, like last week, I don't want to rush to too many conclusions because I just think this is a catastrophically bad injury run that's very hard to manage.
Yeah, and It's been bad in all the very worst ways. You know, Jaden Short goes down in early in the first quarter. So you're playing the game on a hot day, one man down in your rotations, and
when you're already missing the closest player to him, Hooley, who would be playing that role as well.
Yeah, and you've got Jeremy Cameron, who's an extremely good athlete, and your two best athletes in your defenders are both missing, which as it turned out was a problem.
just a bit.
Jaden Short missing actually turned out was one of the rare times when Next Man App actually did work for Sydney Stack, and I think we like everyone else should give him due coverage. But yeah, I agree with the point that, well, how I see it is that, you know, depth means that the difference between your 16th best player and your 26th player isn't catastrophic. There's nothing you can do when you're replacing your third best player with your 26th best player. There is inevitably going to be a huge gap, and the more of those huge gaps you have, the structure doesn't hold. We're very lucky to have Tom Lynch, that the absence of Jack just isn't as catastrophic as it was, as it would be, because our ability to muddle through is sufficiently diminished with Caddy out. Like, when you're losing several players from a particular position, it just makes the whole thing a lot harder. And if you've got player as well, if you've got players out of form or just struggling in a particular role, yep, it's a tough day at the office.
Nick, just to add to the cluster of disasters, sort of forgotten because you played respectively in the second half, but the path to us winning that game was always tough, but it led through Rioli, who's probably in career best form, having an out-of-the-box game. And then he got injured as well. Now, he could play through it, but he was obviously badly affected.
That was a big collection. He's tough.
He's tough, and we needed him to stay out there. But, you know, I think you might recall that I think halfway through the second quarter, I said amongst a private chat, we have no chance of winning this game because Short and Rioli, Short was incapacitated.
Yep, two down.
Yeah, it was, and two running players, you just can't cover it. And that was before Cochran got injured. So it's just, it's a confluence of factors that, it's not reasonable to deal with. And I guess, you know, there's been talk about, it wasn't a big discussion, but a few people on Twitter said, we've lost so much depth, because of signing Tom Lynch, and we lost Conker Lloyd and Miles and Ellis. The argument's clearly rubbish. Now, we could probably use Miles this week because with Dusty's out too. We'd probably, our chances of winning might have moved the dial. But Miles probably wouldn't have even been picked against, the GWS. The belief in AFL systems that Conker somehow increases your chances of winning is, I think, completely...
touching, but misplaced.
There's no statistical evidence to support that. Lovely guy, good depth player. And Sammy Lloyd is not where we're missing players. We actually have a bit of depth and sort of small forwards.
And we haven't got as much depth in form small forwards.
No, that's right. And look, he would have probably played on the weekend. We might have been marginally improved. But you can't replace Dustin Martin. You know, we didn't have in-form Dustin Martin on our reserve list. We didn't have on-song Trent Cotchard. And most obviously, we didn't have an Alex Rance level key back because no team does in their reserves.
No. I mean, Ryan Garthwaite. I like Ryan Garthwaite. We need to keep him away from the super athletic matchups. He had a few positive moments as well, but I honestly think he's been rushed back into the team because of need. He had a really interrupted preseason, and that's tough to deal with.
Yep, he was as they say in NFL parlance, if he was a cornerback, he'd be burnt crispy toast right now. But you can't judge him on this performance. As you say, he's underdone, and he's third gamer given this huge, difficult job. Let's talk about Sydney Stack.
Yeah, let's talk about Sydney Stack. I think we were both intrigued when we signed him on to do preseason training with us with a chance of rookieing him if he worked out.
Borderline excited, because...
Borderline excited. I did note, accurately that no player... we'd never had a player signed through this method play a senior game. So, we needed realistic aspirations. And, as it turns out, looked really good for the first week. He just really looked like a footballer, and the back pocket suited him, I think. And he could move up, and he wasn't scared of traffic. He went the ball when he had the chance, but also did some good defensive work. It kicked a nice goal.
He was fearless, and you know he had one moment of nerves where he kicked the ball out of bounds, but after that he went for his marks. He was hard at it. Nick, there's two really interesting background pieces to Sydney Stack. One very much more than others, and I tweeted it out last week. They interviewed Peter Simic, who's the under-18s Western Australian coach, and he gave a very honest interview about Sydney Stack. And I encourage people to listen to it. And, you know, I wish more coaches were honest with that, but, you know, he said, you know, wonderfully talented. He talked about some of the skills he has, very hard at the ball, great competitor, all those things that we saw. That's what actually everyone kept saying about him, hard at the ball, hard at the ball. But he talked about, you know, why he didn't get drafted. And he was very honest that he's from a tough background and he kept missing practice. And he tells this great story about Sydney was begging him to play and he suspended him from the first match of the Carnivals because he kept skipping practice and he felt he needed tough love because he's seen it before in his playing career. And it also, Sumic, the Western Australian junior coach, he said the best thing that could happen for Stack was to get out of Western Australia.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating. Go listen to the interview, but you can also see he's a wonderful talent. And he said, you know, he said he was arguably the best talent in Western Australia that year. But also, you know, let's not pretend that this is over. This is one game.
No.
And, you know, he's going to have a long career and suddenly he's going to have fame and people recognize him on the street. But, you know, great start. But also, listen, if you watch Dimmer's interview, when we picked him, it was kind of like, he's hard at the ball and, you know, he's got clean, nice disposal. It was almost like he was describing, we need someone to be the opposite of Brandon Ellis. sorry, that's really unfair. Oh, clean. He really emphasized the cleanness. But then he said, we're not sure if he's ready, but we're going to give him a crack. It was sort of like, roll the dice. Well, tell you what. The dice rolled up the right number. Inspired selection.
Yeah, look, it reminded me of the old adage that there's nothing worse than being old and bad. Like if you're gonna lose, at least lose in an interesting way with some hope for the future, and bringing in three guys with a combined total of three games between them. It was interesting, and Garthwaite certainly had his struggles. I liked Noah Bolter's game quite a bit at times, given he only had five disposals. I thought he held up compared to some of the other. He had a stint in the second half as a key back, and I thought he held up okay. Certainly for pace, he has no problems, and just being explosive, attacking the ball. Positioning, that's a work in progress.
Yeah.
Still like the ruck work. And he's not much of a natural forward. But, you know, in current circumstances, well worth persevering with.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, if there's going to be a bright spark, you know, I think against Port as well, which I think the best we can hope for is an honourable loss, is, you know, getting games into Stack and Bolter and we work out a bit of the defence. And, exactly. If you're going to be bad, be bad for a reason, and being bad for a reason
means be interesting.
Yeah, and have players who might be good players for you in the future. You know, don't play hacks who have no upside.
Which frankly, would have, you know, Sammy Lloyd's, I think 29, Miles 26.
Yep.
These guys aren't the future.
Conker 28 or so.
Mm.
Yeah, anyway.
27.
Yeah. 27, my bad. Oleg.
Yes. So, it was, I was mildly surprised it wasn't his career high. That was actually against Collingwood in the dog days of 2016.
For the sake of our non-nerd, who don't have statistical nerd mind meld, what you mean is his 20 disposables?
Yeah, his 20 disposals, sorry.
I knew exactly what you meant, but, you know.
Yeah, look, it was, I think it was the most encouraging game he's had for a while. It was still, yeah, I'm cautiously positive about it. Actually, then, I just realized that, I hadn't realized he didn't play a single game, last year.
Mm.
But, yeah, I mean, the athleticism's there, the speed's there, the composure isn't always there. He spent some time on a wing, which I didn't hate, but I didn't love. Like, yeah. Again, in current circumstances, I'm prepared to persevere with it.
So I think his confidence is shot. He keeps hand passing and not trusting his kicking, unless he's in wide open space, which is a real shame because he can kick. And so I think he needs to get that confidence and start to trust him. Like he's, you know, he really is one of those players where it's the cliche is he just needs some confidence. I think that cliche is probably used.
I think he would have got some confidence.
I hope so. And you know, there was a kick that unfortunately Brando then put out of bounds, but he did a switch kick, which was it was not under pressure.
Brando's got a Brando.
It was just a thing of beauty. And Nick, you know, he was actually above average rated in that game and my beloved AFL rankings. Like, you know, I know there's a lot of debate on Richmond website about him. He was okay. Like, and okay with an upwards arrow where that okay could have been good. And guess what, Nick? He's going to get opportunities now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Fair enough.
I was genuinely heartened by his game.
Jason Castagna was also close to a career high, but in no way do I feel like it was life-affirming.
Well, he was actually in a game where we had someone who played 5 minutes, he was our third worst-rated player, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah. Look, it's good that he's getting around the football, because he's had an interrupted preseason, and he's got to get miles in his legs, and hopefully the touch and the composure will get better with time and better fitness, but, oh. Yeah, didn't like his game. I think Baker was the carryover player in the reserves because I don't think he played VFL, but yeah, it wasn't good.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any need to sort of go over what went wrong with Jack Graham's game because everyone saw it. Nothing like a few high-profile errors. Do you drop him to get some confidence in the VFL?
I'm not sure you can, because if you're bringing Jack Ross in to replace Cochin, which seems obvious. I'm just not sure who's, I suppose Caddy's coming in as well, so you've got a bit more flexibility, but yeah, I don't know.
Okay, I wanted to, a few honourable mentions. Obviously, Lambo was beautiful.
Yep, worked his legs off.
Yep, lots of inside ball, lots of 34 touches. Shedder continues this golden era of late career Edwards, you know, lots of...
Yeah, I actually thought he struggled to get into it early, but yeah, he did get into it.
He did, and, you know, again, very our best-rated player and 25 touches, lots of score involvements, continues to be lovely. And Jack Higgins, plus 20 disposals, meaningful disposals, another goal. He just continues to have the magic round the sticks. May is well on the way to a top 10 finish in the BNF.
And also top 10 in the AFL in goal assists.
Yeah, nice one.
Prestia won more football, but the disposal.
Yeah, he's a problem. If it wasn't for the 2017 Premiership, which is a very, very big qualifier.
Huge. Enormous.
Yeah.
Life affirming.
Yeah. Aside from the most meaningful event in my football supporting life, he is not justifying his salary right now.
No, fair to say. Tom Lynch, look, we mentioned him. I think he's slowly getting better, but he is getting better. And yeah, it's pretty fun to see.
Yeah. And just on Dusty, I mean, he's not playing well, and it's two bad games out of three, which is like that's three games. Let's not get carried away. His first game was perfectly Dusty-like. You know, there's the gesture that's famous, giving away dumb free kicks off the ball. That was pretty painful. That I didn't like.
Yeah, that's the loss of discipline.
And Shane, sorry, come on.
Well, Shane Munford having a go at him in the first place. Talk about glass houses.
You know, calls that didn't hold up very well.
Yep.
My call that Shane Munford doesn't move the dial. He was actually pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, look, he was fine. He's a big physical presence.
And very, very skillful. But not here to talk about the GWS, who I don't. None of us like. But Dusty needs to stop getting his manager doing interviews, just pull his head in and be Dusty Martin, which is non-communicative and very good on the field. And doesn't... it's not this stuff, he's getting roughed up. Yes, he is getting roughed up. You can't tell me that this is... Yeah. You know, the Matt DeBoers have been having cracks at Dusty for years.
Yes, he has.
All right, VFL. Yeah. Unless there's anything else. No.
Well, the VFL won down at Cadinia Park, which is always a life-affirming thing.
Couldn't agree.
And they had a number of young guys play well. So, and a successful return from injury from Josh Caddy. So, pretty big tick.
And a cool come-from-behind win.
Yeah, good times. It's obvious we're extremely pro-Ruckman, but what's your level of excitement about Callum Coleman-Jones?
You know, I keep watching him. I always watch his highlights and wonder, how's this going to translate into the AFL? And there is a future, Nick. You know, I'm not sure how long we can sustain the two ruckman, not playing a second ruckman, where Bolter goes to the back line to be the Rance replacement and CCJ comes in to be the second right forward. I think he's one bag of gold, like a four-goal bag away from the dustbin rolled.
Yeah.
He's pretty big.
He's big. One thing that he's got a big work rate, which I noticed in the intra-club game, but it's hard. It's one of those things that's hard to capture on the highlights. But, yeah, look, he's a big boy, but not as big as he will be or needs to be, but... Yeah, he's trending up. Like he was listed as our best player on the VFL website, not the club one. So yeah, I was pretty encouraged. Patrick Nacer's game at the other end of the spectrum in terms of somebody who looks good on the highlights. Yeah, Patrick Nacer looked pretty good.
You know, someone's good when you're watching when they appear in the highlight reel of another player, and you go, "Holy crap, who's that?" 45.
Yeah, he can kick a football in a long and pleasing fashion, which we've always known. But yeah, it's coming together a bit more.
It's coming together in grown-ups football. I think I want Towner to play AFL just to cheer me up a bit.
Yeah, he didn't play badly actually.
Yeah, he's probably not.
And he also has had no preseason, so I think has to be a little while away. We mentioned Caddy, played three quarters, had 17 disposals, 7 clearances. Yeah, it's not quite Tom Lynch saying when he's right he'll be in the team, but I think when the coaches are confident he's got his fitness up, he's straight back in.
I think that conversation has already taken place.
Yeah, look, I mean, the only thing is if he pulled up sore. That's the only reason he's not in the team this week. Jack Ross, look, we gave him a lot of love this week. I think he's a pretty reasonable person to come into the team. 8 tackles, which I liked. Didn't quite win as much football, but yeah, I think he's just put together a couple of really good weeks and deserves a crack.
Come in.
Yeah. Shai Bolton. Like, he put together a game.
He did. I don't know. It's sort of... One of the many things that's going wrong is our forward pressure has just dropped right off. I'm not sure... You know, because you're not going to play in midfield.
6 tackles and 12 inside 50s. They're big numbers.
It is, but, you know, he's been playing in the midfield. I just don't think he's going to get that kind of level of pressure if he plays... You know, as a forward mid, which is what he'd do in the seniors. But yeah, it's certainly interesting. We're all just waiting for that moment where Shard Bolton has sort of 30 touches, but sort of 14 of them are goal assists.
yeah. As we've said before, he's a really high end talent, and you know, hopefully he's starting to put it together because time is short. Mentioned very quickly. Fraser Turner had his VFL debut as well, 17 disposals, 8 handball receives, like that. He's a really high endurance player, so I think both of those numbers can go up, but for a guy who's isn't 19 until the end of the year, that's not a bad debut. But at the other end of the spectrum, Luke English, also in his debut, had 5 disposals, so yeah, that's...
Yeah.
Suitable expectations.
Yeah, gotta ease into it.
Mm.
All right, Nick. Now, we might wrap it up there because, inshallah, we are about to bring on a special guest.
Mm. Very good.
And joining us now in the podcast is Kylie Maslin, well-known Richmond fanatic and writer. Who is also Adelaide-based. Welcome to the podcast, Kylie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Kylie, you're in South Australia right now. How far are you away from Mick Bean right now, and can you give us any update on his status?
Well, I live about a 15-minute walk from Glenelg Oval, so...
Is he training right now? Do you have any... How's he looking, you know...
Has Neil Baum spoken to him?
I didn't see Bobby in the stands on Friday night. Disappointed to say. I actually don't know where Liam McBean lives, but I mean it's only a matter of time, given it's Adelaide.
So Kylie, you witnessed in person the resurrection of McBean. Very close to Easter, Mick Bean came back to life and kicked 9 goals. How was it being at the ground? Describe the atmosphere. Talk us through the goals.
It was wonderful. It was the opening round of the SANFL and second round of SANFL for the year, first home game for the Bays. By all accounts, he played pretty well in the first game, but you could just kind of see a bit of a twinkle in his eye, kicked 3 goals in the first quarter, and, yeah, finished up kicking 9, which was pretty incredible. Out-muscled Darcy Fogarty, who I quite like, from the Crows. Yeah. He's some decent muscle.
First-round draft pick last year, yeah.
Yeah. And the crowd just love him. It was really lovely to see him being back at Glenelg, and everyone just really stoked to see him back. And by the last quarter, anytime he handballed off or gave away an assist to anyone else, the crowd just put a disappointment that he was robbing himself of.
Yeah. Did the Glenelg Fagans go down to the end that they were kicking?
Say that again.
Did the Glenelg fans go down to the end that he was kicking?
They were already at that end for the last quarter. So, yeah.
So
it was pretty lovely.
So you are actually a Glenelg fan, are you not?
Yeah, that's actually how I came to Richmond was through Glenelg. So pre-Crows days, anyone living in SA used to basically follow the VFL team that had the same colours as their SANFL team. And Glenelg are yellow and black and from Thailand. And so same song, same Guernsey. And then when the Crows came in, I was sort of already well entrenched Richmond fan, and you know, it was kind of peak Richo time, so
yeah,
good choice.
But
can I ask, was it sort of a bittersweet moment because you finally had that moment we all dreamed of, Lee McBean taking over Friday night footy in the yellow and black, but it just wasn't it wasn't at the MCG in front of 80,000 people?
I would love for him to have had that, but it was pretty delightful for me to see him do that in front of 3,000 at Glenelg Oval Friday night.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a lovely sort of, it felt like a real coming home story. So I loved it.
Good times. Can I ask, as a South Australian, are Crows fans still salty when you wear Richmond gear around town?
100%, and it's wonderful.
Bring it on.
How many years do you think you can get out of this?
Hopefully a lifetime. My brother and I are both, you know, very fierce Richmond fans and copped a lot of shit at school days when the Crows were winning premierships and we were very far from doing that. And we're really going to milk this for a long time.
Oh. Even talking about it, one of the many, easily in the top 100 of what was one of the best days of my life, was listening to the Crows Big Footy podcast of the preview of the game, where it was about an hour and a half long, and at no point did they think they were going to do anything other than win by 10 goals. That's great.
Yeah, I think if they won in Adelaide, or, you know, at least anyone who was a Crows fan, who is a Crows fan, that's what they thought was going to happen. That was a real sense of entitlement to the premiership. We did have, you know, every Port supporter on our side, so that was lovely. But, yeah, they're really, you know, the worst.
So,
yeah, then.
Yes.
I could do a whole episode on why they're the worst.
So, Kylie, I really wanted to ask you, you are sort of an AFLW, you're an early adopter. You've always been, your tweets on it are great. And, you know, I have to confess, now that Richmond has a team, I'm of course an instant expert, but, honestly, I don't know what I'm talking about. And I'm really interested to hear your perspective on the KB signing.
Sure. Well, yeah, obviously, AFLW means a lot to me. I've waited my whole life to see this happen, really. And it really now, seeing Richmond having a team and seeing it all kind of starting to happen is really kind of goosebump material. Actually, I watched the SANFL women's team play before the McBean rising. So Katie Brennan, it's like way to start with a bang. You know, it's a big announcement of, you know, they said they were going to recruit aggressively, and this is definitely that. It's, you know, a big name, captain of another club.
Marquee player.
Heartbroken. Yep. Heartbroken. She has had some trouble with injury in the last, like, 2 years ago. She had a really bad injury, and she didn't quite pick up her form last year. And she's spoken about in the last couple of days that she did struggle to kind of get back in post-injury, and I think her moving clubs is part of her kind of changing things up in order to get back to that. I feel like personally she can get back to that good form, but there is going to be a bit of a question hanging over that early next year to see where she's at.
So I guess the question I have, and prefaced by the point that I really don't know what I'm talking about again, is that is there potential for the game to have gone past her?
Well, we've seen that happen with a few marquee players, and Mo Hope is a really quite heartbreaking example of that, where, you know, she was such a high-profile marquee player at the start of AFLW1 and then never quite sung in the way that she had been sort of posted to do, traded to North for this year's season, and just today or yesterday was delisted. Other than if she was to get picked up by St Kilda, that's really the only thing I can see, other than her kind of playing out in the VFLW. So it's a kind of best and worst case scenario that the younger cohort moving through are usurping these players. It's really exciting for the league, and it's really exciting for the future of AFLW. But, there might just be some hearts broken along the way. I don't think Katie's past it, though. I think her fitness, with all due respect to Mo, I think Katie's fitness is at a much higher level.
Well, she's 26, and Mo Hope was already 30 at the start of the competition. So I'm, sad to say she was probably born a bit too early. Like, she was a pioneer, but was on, quite possibly on the decline by the start of the competition. The other, look, I'm more glass half full than Andy, but also because the drums are beating that we've signed Sabrina Frederick-Traub as well, who's also been a gun forward, who can play in a ruck as well. But I think I actually really like starting with two big high-profile forwards to build a team around.
Yeah, I mean, Katie can play more midfield as well. And, yeah, Sabrina Frederick-Traub is just an absolute unit on
the
ground. Like, she has height and size that few others do in the league, and her sort of crashing her way through forward contests in yellow and black would be very exciting to see.
Mm.
But, I heard that it's almost an... You know, it's pretty much a done deal. So hopefully we'll see in the next couple of days that comes to be true.
Mm. I, do, I was wondering why, because apparently they've been able to sign the VFLW players, but have been holding off on that. And I actually understood why when they had the press conference with Peggy introducing Katie Brennan. I thought that's a better big bang to start with rather than, you know, announcing guys who've been at the club for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you want to know what you're building around. It will make sense as to what the needs are once that sort of, once this initial round calms down a little bit. And, you know, as we all, as many of us said during the Tom Lynch trade, like, always just have trust in Barmy. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The training, Richmond's trading record made an incredible, the graph shifted incredibly at the moment Barm walked in the door. Now,
yeah, thank God.
Indeed, indeed. Now, Kylie, I have a difficult last question. So I just, with 3 minutes thought, I thought about some of the great artists and writers who are Richmond fans, which media personalities, which includes Conrad Marshall and George Megalaginis and Wally Daly and even Mick Molloy. And you yourself are a talented rising writer. And my question is, do you think all the suffering of being a Richmond fan, is that a crucible of artistic talent?
It gives me a good channel for emotional range.
That's one way to put it.
And look, I was really, you know, I was really able to cash in 2017 of, you know, that getting a few pieces sold on just like my ridiculous levels of excitement and emotion about the whole thing. So other than, you know, changing my life forever in all of the best ways possible, it was, you know, probably being quite helpful for my career as well.
Well, speaking of highs, how do you think you'll feel seeing the AFLW team run through a banner for the first time?
I would absolutely guarantee that I will be sobbing.
Wow.
So a friend of mine, Kirby Fenwick, who also writes about AFLW, grew up as a Bulldogs fan, and the first season went to every one of their games. So flew to Brisbane, flew to Adelaide, saw every round. And I'm already kind of thinking how I might finance the same situation. Hopefully they'll play a game in Adelaide. It will be incredibly emotional. But I'm so excited to see it. And just, you know, it's a different, it's Aussie rules, but it's a different competition. And I mean that in that there's a different atmosphere at games. It's played differently. But I really hope that, not just with Richmond, but with, you know, as the league keeps expanding and more clubs get a women's team, that people who maybe haven't engaged with the league up until their team is out there, I hope, you know, for example, that Richmond fans who haven't watched much of the AFLW so far will check it out and will spend more time kind of getting to know women's footy and supporting it. And it's amazing for kids watching and seeing women play footy when they're at the games live, but I think it's, you know, equally important to see, you know, their mums and dads watching on TV at home and, you know, being involved with it as well.
Well, we were discussing this last week, and I think our consensus view was, and if you're listening, Benny, give us a nice suburban oval with a bit of character and cold beer, and we'll absolutely love it.
Yeah, look, the one thing about that, I actually worry Vic Park isn't going to be big enough. Like, I think it's about 15,000-17,000. I think for the first Richmond AFLW game, that's not going to be enough. Like, I'm on the high side of expectations, but I think there's going to be a fair bit of excitement about it. And there's 100,000 Richmond supporters. I think it could be quite a big event.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that we play at Punt Oval as much as possible as planned, but dare I say it, we may need to go to the comic book stadium for the first game.
Yeah.
And no one wants to do that.
No.
No, but, I mean, yeah, there may be no alternatives.
Yeah.
Optus Oval, I think, can host around 30. Right? That might be enough, but, yeah.
Prince Park, is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like 20, yeah. Well, that was a lockout at 23,000 for the first ever game, so it's not huge.
That's still bigger than Vic Park, though. But
anyway,
Kyla, I promised you a 10-minute interview, and it's been so interesting we've gone 20. Correct me if I'm wrong, but if people want to read your writing, it's kyliemaslin.com. We'll post something in our show notes, so if people want to click on that, is that correct?
That's great. Yeah, thank you.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Our pleasure. Mm-hmm.
So, thanks again to Kylie Meslin for joining us. What sort of experience do you think she's going to have at the Port Adelaide game this weekend, Andy?
Not pleasant, A, because Port Adelaide fans are legendarily, let's face it, feral. And secondly, the question I have for you, is there any chance we don't get smoked?
Oh, there's a chance. Port Adelaide are a decent team, but not a great team. You know, they're probably a little bit unlucky to lose against Brisbane. They had a good win against Hawthorn round one. So, yeah, look, I think we've got a chance. Part of what sort of dulls the pain somewhat of us having a bad season is, you know, you look at Port Adelaide and they've got 3 first-round draft picks and they've all come into the team and looked pretty good. So, you know, high draft picks not so bad if you have an off year.
I'm not completely convinced we are going to have an off year yet. I have hope, but I think this game, the best we can hope for is a few young players playing well and no injuries.
Mm. Yeah, look, we get Caddy back this week. The week after, Martin and Hooley. And maybe Jack's not too far away the week after that. Like,
yeah, the week after the Sydney game is the key one because we can't afford to drop any more. We get Jack back. We get Dusty back. Outside chance of Jack, some chance of Hawley, and we'll have Grimes back. Obviously, he's been missing. So
yeah, true.
So, to me, the Sydney game's the key one where we have to start turning the season round. This game, the Port game, I think is gone.
Yeah, look, at least we'll have some young players to look at it. Yeah, I just want them to have a crack and no more injuries. That'd be great. Or suspensions.
Couldn't agree more.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
is officially Tiger Time.
We never wait until the last one.
Silence goes. Like the tiger of old, the storm and the bones of the tiger. Yellow and black, we're from Tigerland.
It's just a celebration of all good things which from right now.
Duncan Daly.
Alex Rance.
Never not going to go, was he? Was he?
Pick up from Conjun. Left off snap. The goal of the game.
Trent Zimmer and Brendan Gale deserve all the credit. They've built something fantastic and we just got to keep riding away.
Martin, three votes.